Welcome to the Green Green Grassroots of Football with me, Andy Glover.
Me, Mark Grinter.
Okay, before we go further, I would just like to thank our sponsor, Rachel's Bookkeeping, for all of your bookkeeping needs. So this episode is actually going to be part one of a two-part special, where we look at what it means to be a grassroots football coach, and we are joined by a special guest who I will introduce in a moment. Then our next episode will take a look at some of the biggest administrative difficulties facing coaches, and we will look at least one technical solution. But more on that in the next episode. For now, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest, someone Mark and I have been looking to get on here for a while, and we felt that this topic would be perfect for him to share his knowledge and experience. Our guest is Ben Gerasitano. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Andy.
And now, if I may, I would just like to pass over to Ben to tell us a little about himself. Ben.
Hi. Firstly, thank you for having me on. I've been coaching for around 10 years now. Seems like a lifetime, to be honest, but in a good way. Co-founded Red Falcon Football Club. Known Mark for a little bit longer than that, as I had my own soccer schools for a while. Where I coach soccer tots, and that's a little bit about me, really, to be fair.
Yeah. That's fine. Okay. Okay, so I usually begin with a quote, but for this episode, I'll start with three. So, a good coach takes his love for the game and instills it in you. He molds you into a player he sees inside of you and watches your talent and dedication grow into a skill that you both can be proud of. His payoff is the smile he sees in your face after you've reached your goal. His drive are the tears you cry because you want it so bad, knowing he had the same feeling inside him too. Make him proud and never get less than your best. You both deserve it. I'll just predicate or posticate, whatever you want to call it, that with him or her. Apologies there, I'm reading a quote. Another one. I am a coach because of the kids and the passion I have for the sport itself. There is no other feeling quite like helping young athletes further develop their natural persistence, determination, discipline, dedication, resiliency, work ethic, heart, leadership skills, connection with, and respect for others, not only in competition, but in life. And then finally, one for all you Celtic fans, I may be corrected here, John Collins.
Celtic.
Too often I hear it. Clear your lines. You can't play football there. And you see young players kicking up the pitch thinking they're going about their job. Winning games is for the coach's ego. It should be about developing technically gifted players. So, well, I haven't got a list of things as such to go through. Just going to basically, I think tonight, talk about what it means to be a grassroots coach. Anybody want to start? I've got a few things here about what we do. The key one is coaching. Yeah. I mean, Ben, how did you start your journey into grassroots coaching?
My journey into grassroots coaching. So, I wanted to bring the children that I had in my soccer schools across to a grassroots club. Met with several. Didn't quite agree with their ethos. So I had to take the big step and try and create one myself with a band of people who believed in that vision, which happened and is still happening 7 years down the line. So that was my journey into grassroots coaching. I didn't plan on being chairman of the club, but I just wanted to be a coach, but that kind of fell into place. It is what it is. And that's it, really. I've just gone from there. Just gone from, you might want to say, strength to strength. Not me personally, but the club has, and the children that I've coached.
Well, so I'm hoping this podcast doesn't actually put people off, if I'm honest. But I've got a list of things here. There are 8 for a start. So you're a coach, referee, kit person, first aider, grounds person, social events coordinator, treasurer, safeguarder, and as a part of it, you've got to continually professionally develop.
Yeah.
If I missed anything,
sometimes you can be. I feel, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes you can also be. You can. I feel sometimes like an uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like that extra parent,
the,
possibly.
That adult that.
Yeah.
That they can go to as who they maybe not be able to speak to their parents about.
Yeah.
Or some, you know, you're a role model. You're somebody that, you
definitely
know, I think grassroots coaching, if you're being totally honest, we might have between the two, say, Fries and Red Falcons, I don't know, between us, there's got to be 500-600 players.
Yeah.
If we're being totally honest, if one of them goes on to be a professional out of those 500-600, it's highly unlikely. But it might happen.
Might happen.
The main thing for the other 595, 900, you know, is you're preparing them, you're helping prepare them for life. And you're preparing with football, not it's football, it's getting helping working in teams and jobs, and that's what you're doing. You're making that individual enjoy their game, being physically and mentally healthy, and expanding their knowledge of football, what they love doing. The majority of the children, you'd go probably over 500 of the kids between them, just want to play for fun.
100%.
And you're the person guiding them through that journey. If between all of our, both of our clubs, one of them becomes a professional footballer, fantastic, but I don't think that's the main, personally, I don't think that's the main goal of what we're doing, because you're there for the majority of the others.
No, absolutely.
100%. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
But how do you do that? And I say that because nowadays you have to have a minimum of introduction to coaching football.
Yeah.
You must be DBS cleared.
Yeah.
Somebody must have concussion guidelines within your team. Part of your introduction to coaching gives you a safeguarding children course and your first aid course. Those two must be renewed every 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I say continuous professional development. That's not continual professional development. That's just renewing it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I recently applied for my level 3. There were apparently too many applied. I got turned down, but I was told, if you want to, make sure you are doing your CPD so we can look at your records and see that you've been doing your CPD to show that you really, really want this.
Yeah.
You know, so there's all these other things you have to do, and there's all the time. Now, I'm going to come to time first, and I'll say this. I don't know how many teams you do, but I'm currently running two teams. So I've got my under 16 boys, and I'm doing the under 8 girls. So I'll just give you a scenario of where I am. So on a Friday, I leave my house at 5:20. I pick up a player who lives near me and the grandson, get down here about 5:45, 5:50. Set up the training. Training 6 till 7. Take it all down. Get home about 7:30. Now, with the lights coming in, there's also putting all the lights up. And usually, if I'm first here, I put the lights up as well. So that's Friday night. There's a good 2 hours there. Saturday morning, leaving the house just about 8:30 with the granddaughter. Come down here. Mark's already set up the Wildcats. So I'm setting up next to him. My lot. So 9 till 10, and then that finishes, take that all down. Perhaps come in here, support the pavilion, go on home again. So another 2 hours on a Saturday. Sunday, and here's where I really hope the wife isn't listening. So let's say we're away, and the girls are at St. Nicholas at Chipping Sodbury, and the boys are at Porter's Head. So I'll leave the house at 9:15. Again, I'll pick up the player who lives near me and my grandson. So it's 9:15, we'll drive to Chipping Sodbury. I'll pick up the granddaughter, this is the girls in the morning. Drive to Chipping Sodbury, we'll have two matches. First the league game, and then the second, I've got enough for two teams, the friendly. That will finish at 12-ish. By the time we get back to where I live, 12:45, drop them off, just in time to say, hello lovely, bye. Drive off, pick up the player who lives me and the grandson, drive down to Porter's Head, have that game, 2 o'clock kickoff, get back about 4, believe that finishes about 4:45, get back around about 5 o'clock. If we're home, you think, well, you can leave a bit later, but actually no, because you've got to come down, set up the respect barrier.
Yeah.
So actually, it's no real difference because you're the one doing that.
Yeah.
And if we're home in the afternoon with the boys, well, you support the pavilion. So actually, I tend to get home later if we're home, because we come in, we have a drink, we have a chat. So yeah, 9:15 in the morning till 5:30 every Sunday from September through to the beginning of May. Please don't listen to this, my darling wife. And then during the week, I mean, I work away, so I've got not very little to do on the evening, so I'll end up listening to podcasts. And one is a history podcast, but the other one is football. So I'm listening to football podcasts. I work Monday to Thursday, go do compressed hours. On a Friday, I'll be during the day, I'll be working on the club website that I run, updating that. So now, not everyone does those level of hours, no, and I know. And some people look at me and go, "Are you crazy?" Yeah, maybe. I've been doing this now for 30 years, and I've slightly got it in my blood. But even for a normal manager, yeah, and there are some out there, you've still got your minimum 2.5 hours training,
yeah,
your minimum 3 hours of your match, plus there's planning, plus, you know, there's calls, there's contacts.
Oh, it's constant, it's relentless. So,
I mean, as
and that's without the continual professional development that they say you could be trying.
I mean,
to
I think as if you were running one team, realistically, you're looking at 20 hours a week.
Mm. Yeah.
By the time you've got to plan your session, you've got to speak to the parents, and everything. Well, 15 to 20, maybe 20, but 20 on.
Because when you get home, you've also got to do all the post match report of sending it all in. In the girls' league, it's on the app, filling all that in.
So
I think please don't be put off, people. It is good fun. But yeah, carry on.
It is worthwhile. But yeah, time. 100%. I mean, granted, I have told many a fib when getting coaches. You're only looking at 3 or 4 hours a week. It really doesn't take much of your time. But while it is, you might lie to them to get them in, because the joy and the satisfaction you get from once you're in.
Yeah.
And it's like with everything. The more you put in, the more you get out. And 9 times out of 10, I think most people... Andy, Ben, so we're now in a position that you know who will be good at it, who've got a good idea.
You can tell. I help them.
Oh, I'll do it, and I help them with the admin, and then bit by bit, I slowly walk away, and then
Slowly, I just drop them.
Yeah, bit by bit, and then suddenly they're doing the 15, 20 hours. And how did that happen? I mean, brother's a classic example, and he's fantastic with his team,
yeah,
and he's now got 2 teams, and he's still he doesn't quite know he's got access to the team yet, does he? No, he does now. And so it's realistically it does take and I think if you could get away with just to, you know, the amount of parents who think that you do just turn up on a Friday night, Saturday and off you go, and you could do it.
I think it depends what you want to get out of the children as well.
Yeah.
So the more you, like you said, the more you put in, the more you're going to get, the more you're going to get out of it. For me, the more hours I spend planning, the easier the training session became. Yeah. And always, it still does. The more you put in, the easier the session is going to be, because you've run it through your head 3 or 4 times, be it you've watched one on YouTube or you've stole ideas from which, because a good coach is a magpie.
Yeah, I still all my ideas.
100%. And you always got, if I walk past a training session and I don't stop for 5 seconds and have a little look, see what's going on, then am I actually a coach?
Yeah.
You've got to take ideas from me. I might change it and adapt it so it suits my level of player.
Yeah.
But, and you guys will do the same.
Hmm.
And I think every good coach, or anyone who cares about, whether it be basketball, netball, hockey, football, rugby, whatever the sport, if you will do that, and you will learn, and you'll take elements and think, I wouldn't quite do it that way, I'll tweak it so it suits my narrative for my players. And I think that's a massive thing as well. So it, for me, I've spent a lot of hours watching YouTube videos, and sometimes overwatch, and my brain's fried because I've seen too many drills. I'm like, actually, what was I doing?
But this is the problem with planning, because you know, you have to change it up. So what I've done with our boys in the past is I've worked on a 5 or 6 week regimen of, this is the basic routine, and over those 5 or 6 weeks, we'll do the same routine, but getting more and more complex.
Advanced, yeah.
And then, because by week sort of 3, they've got it, and by week 5, they've got it, and they're doing really well at it, and they're learning from it.
Agreed.
First 2 weeks, they're just getting to understand it.
Yeah.
With my girls, I don't know if I can do that for more than 2, maybe 3 weeks because they're going to get bored of it.
Yeah.
So you need to be, okay, we've done that for 2 weeks, so it's just something different now, you know?
Yeah.
But how many routines are you having to look for to learn to try yeah. out with them across even just one season?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
You know?
Do you ever go back to a training session?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's really good because if I say to them, we're going to do this today, do you ever give them ownership and go, can you set that up?
Yeah, as we have done now.
I do that quite often. Once they've known the drill,
yeah,
and they know what we're going to do, I'll go, right, girls or boys, we're going to be doing this today. Show them the plan, and they go out and set up.
I mean, things like the warm-up, the boys' warm-ups, we were doing that from virtually under, sort of under 7, under 8.
Yeah.
Once I've shown them the warm-up, it's like, off you go.
You know the warm-up.
Go do this, yeah. And the idea, expectation was that by the time they were under 9, under 10, we'd turn up and they'd be warming up. Under 16s now, we turn up, they're firing shots at the keeper.
Yeah.
Boys, go warm up. Yeah. Come on, you know the routine.
You're going to pull a hammy kicking balls at the goalkeeper from the edge of the box.
Oh, come on. We've been doing this for years. You know the routine. But yeah, you know. Once you tell them, once you remind them, it's like, oh, yeah, come on. And all I have to do is say, look. And every time we look, the opposition are warming up properly. And it's like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah,
no, I don't know about you like that, Gore. Hopefully yours are better.
The girls are, yeah, they're getting there. They're not too, but they're
younger, obviously, than the 16s.
Yeah, so they are quite, the warm-ups they're pretty good at. I mean, but again, each day is different. And you said today, I must admit, my girls are usually pretty good. Tonight, we had a training session. Not one of them listened. They were all doing their own little thing, no matter what. I could have been there. I might not have been there. They really didn't give a monkeys tonight.
Could have been sat in the car park. Yeah,
they really
yeah.
didn't give a doodahs. But because, again, they're young.
Yeah.
And you're going to get nights where
there's
something's happened at school, something's happened here, there's been something, you know, there's far more exciting.
They've
that
been
they,
on a school
yeah,
trip or whatever, yeah.
And what I was saying tonight went in one ear, out the other, and they didn't give a monkeys, really. But most of the time, but you've got to ride with it. So I reined in. Like, I was going to do X, Y, Z. I thought that ain't going to happen tonight.
No.
And we basically they just had a game and stuff. And because
I was going to say that the game is the biggest fallback, and there's nothing wrong with that. I always used to think, I used to criticise myself, thinking, oh, this session's not going very well. Oh, I'm just going to have a game, and I used to think to myself, that's me giving up. But actually, ultimately, what are they going to do on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon?
Yeah.
They're going to play a game.
Absolutely.
So where's the best place to learn? In a game environment.
Yeah.
And I might stop that game and go, right, what could we have done here? Stay where you are. What can we do here? We're on the ball. Where can we play from here? And then that becomes my training session. So I used to beat myself up. Now I don't.
No.
So I've got a very standard thing that if I've had at least a 3 week break, maybe 3 or 4 week break, the next training session we come back, it is just a game.
Just a match.
Yeah. Nothing else.
Just
the first thing back. Just that reminder, that muscle memory reminder.
Yeah.
Get back into it.
Yeah,
I don't even think about coaching that very first. And then the next week, we're back into coaching.
Yeah.
But you've had a break. Let's get you remembering what it's about.
Yeah.
That's always the way I do it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and another, you talk about the girls tonight, you know, had no interest. That's another one for a future podcast, obviously.
Yeah.
The difference between the boys and the girls.
Yeah.
Because you tend not to get that with the boys. And also, we had a game recently where the team playing me went through and my last defender was twirling around in circles with her arms wide. And they just ran straight past her.
I've had that in boys as well.
Oh, have you? Okay, fair enough.
Looking at aeroplanes generally.
I can remember looking at a train when I was younger. But I did watch the play when they came towards me. Okay, so another thing we have to do, and I find myself doing it quite often, is being a qualified referee. I don't know if you gentlemen, how many here are qualified referees? I am. Yes,
yeah.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
it wasn't the first thing I did, but when I thought about when I became a manager, I have to be a qualified referee, but it's just an unfortunate side effect of it. But what do you find are the, well, I say the advantages and drawbacks then, of being a referee at your own matches?
Drawback is you end up defaulting to referee.
I say at your own matches because obviously you a referee, yes, you can referee other matches for your club and you get called upon. That's another thing. But first, let's go with your own matches first.
So if you haven't got a referee, you tend to be the volunteer that does step up just so the children can play. And ultimately, that's what it's around it. Like, no referee in a game. We say it quite often. And if you haven't got a referee, you haven't got a game, have you? So, yeah, so when you're a qualified one and you've got your DBS check, etc., so you're unfortunately that man or woman in the middle, aren't you?
Yeah, again, you do it because A, you're qualified, B, you know, for the girls and all boys, like I said, like Ben said, no ref, no game. It's such a big thing. And you do it. And again, you can't win. I think.
No, you can't win.
I have been accused of, and I think I'm sure everybody has around here, has been accused. You're favouring your own team. Oh, in fact, you're favouring the away team more than. I've got to be honest, yeah. I probably go. If it's a 50-50, I will tend to, I'll go for the away team just on that thing, and you know, we'll
try and overcompensate, don't you?
Yeah, and you get accused. No matter what, though, you get accused. I mean, it wasn't my own team. I reffed a women's game last week, and both teams were not happy with me at the end of the game. And I think, to be honest, I thought, well, fair enough. I've been consistent. I might have been rubbishly consistent, but both teams have ticked. I think
Yeah,
but you can't win. And again, I think we've done this on this podcast with refs, and we were just talking about it's a horrible job. And as a coach, you have to do it. You do step up, and you can't win. But the only reason coaches are having to step up is there's not enough league referees. The reason there's not enough league referees is the abuse they get. Yeah. It is a vicious circle, and the only way to stop this vicious circle is. People have got to realise, certainly at youth football, it's children's football. You are not winning the World Cup, you're not winning the Premier League, no matter what. It is kids' football. And most of them, like we've said earlier, 99.9% aren't going to be professional footballers. They might have a career in sport.
Yeah.
But the only way, what are you teaching them? What are you teaching them by giving.
I think whilst you were upset in both sets of team players on Saturday, I was upset in both sets of parents on the pitch next year.
You were, yeah.
You
had a right thing.
Yeah. I had an interesting game on the pitch. Yeah. I was left with this is under eight girls.
Under eight girls.
And I was upset in both sets of parents. That's mine and theirs. Because the issue was there was a lot of grabbing of each other.
Yeah.
But once they're grabbing each other, if one's grabbing and one's not, it's a clear foul. If they're both grabbing then you just say, you just play. Not according to a lot of these spectators.
The other week, funnily enough, I offered my whistle to a parent of the opposition who, funnily enough, it was a away game. And I got there just to watch my daughter because she plays in a team where I'm not a coach now. I help out time to time because coaches ask me to, which is fine, I don't mind. As I arrive, coaches walking towards me. I went, "Oh, do you want me to run the line?" Because they don't mind doing that either. Because that ends up happening. They don't mind doing that. And the answer was no. They haven't got a referee, so I've asked. All right, I'll do it. It's fine. We've got my whistle on my back. It's fine. So I end up refereeing this game. And 5 minutes in, one of our players puts a really good shoulder-to-shoulder challenge in, knocks one player over, straight away chipping away at me. I was like, "Well, sorry." So I just stopped the game, and I was like, "There was nothing wrong with it. Girls play on." I said, "Well, good challenge to both of them." And he wasn't happy with it, this parent, and the game was going on. I just stopped the game where it was and restarted with the drop ball after we had a conversation.
I spoke this particular match, I spoke to the parents 3 times.
Yeah, it was about three. It was about 3 times in 5 minutes. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. I've actually, during this week, created a graphic to show that if you're in one position and then there's a player in front of you and another player beyond them, you can't see the player beyond them. But spectators to the side
can
clearly see what's happening.
Yeah.
But you're behind, so you can't. I've created this graphic ready for next time because that was one of the criticisms I had from people on both sides. Ref, we can clearly see it. I'm sure you can clearly see it.
Yeah.
But I'm in the middle.
And you're running your diagonal line.
I'm giving what I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So
we don't even have VAR.
We have no VAR. It's difficult being, and as a manager, you have to be referee.
You look at VAR, you look at the Tottenham Liverpool game recently.
Yeah.
You got 3-4 officials on the pitch. I don't know, 6 or 7 of them in VAR, apparently watching the cricket at the same time they were as well.
Oh,
but They were there, so you've got all these officials, you've got all the technology in the world, millions of pounds, and it still goes wrong. On a grassroots football pitch, you've got one person, generally, sometimes not even without linesmen. And,
yeah.
And they, it's ridiculous.
Especially at underage, you don't have line, you know, you don't have anyone running the line. Because you don't, well, you don't need it, but maybe you do, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you've got nobody helping, you've got the throw-ins, but again, coaches have to do this, because you've got the vicious circle, like we said. There is not enough refs.
No.
And we can say we had a ref that we all know, who we all think is impartial, is a decent ref, knows the football to a standard. It's a 15-year-old lad.
Oh, he's a good referee. I know you're on about.
And he got terrible abuse on the weekend. And at the moment, will not be reffing any more grassroots football.
And that's sad.
Because he doesn't want to.
And that was at an under-9s game. Mm. He got swore at.
By a player.
By a player.
Yeah, an 8-year-old player.
I'd have sent him off.
Got abused by the ref, by the opposition coaches and parents and God knows what else. And again, it's adults swear or having a go at a 15-year-old child.
A child.
It's a child.
It's a child.
And I think people have got to get a grip of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's worse than after COVID?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say we have less referees.
We have less referees, we have less volunteers.
Yeah.
And I think the sidelines have got worse.
But this is one of the reasons, because there's less volunteers, less referees. Mm. You as the coach, as the manager, have to take these roles, responsibilities on.
Yeah.
And I'll come back to me one more time before we go on. I have definitely changed. And I say this because I hated refereeing my own team in the when I first ran it. It was 10, 20, 30 years ago, and I had to referee my own team. If I can clearly remember one time we were 0-0 with 10 minutes to go, we were like second in the league, and they were through, and my defender just blatantly took one of their players out, ball went off to the side, throw in, because my own team, I just couldn't do it. And afterwards, I said to the manager, please don't make me ref my own team again.
Yeah, exactly.
I just couldn't do it. I'm better now. I am.
Yeah, yeah, no.
I just hated refing my own team because I just struggled.
It is hard.
It's hard. I'm better now. I am. I am better. Yeah. Sorry, John.
Last weekend, I'm not.
Should I say his name as well, the opposition manager?
Go on.
Sorry, John O'Brien, chairman of the Hammond League.
Oh, Warmley. Yeah, Warmley Rangers. I remember John.
He's chairman of the Hammond League still. Yeah, so sorry, is. Mr. Chairman.
He's been around for a while.
In fairness, that we came runners up that season. We lost one game, and it was them who beat us. And we drew, and the game that happened in, we drew with them that game as well.
Well, the other weekend we were short of a referee again, so Muggins here steps up, and I try and do it as impartial as I can. And you do it down the middle, and actually their coach did say to me afterwards in the bar, thank you, for you were really good, and one of the parents came up to me and said, good, so I'll take that one, because you never get told you're good as a referee. Yeah.
Well, I now get criticism from my own parents because I'm giving too much the other way now.
So this,
I think I've, yeah.
I gave two fouls for exactly the same thing, but opposite teams. One was a penalty to us for a push in the back. They went up the other end, and we did it right on the edge of the box. Both scored from both situations, so I was like, whew. That was a, whew, thank God for that one sort of thing. But late in the game, the ball kept going out of play. Their goalie was wasting time. It won all. So I kept stopping my watch, And there was 10 seconds to go, and we scored a winner. And I slumped in the middle of the pitch, just like, I looked at my watch, and I was like, I can't believe this. Because it then I felt like I had played extra time for us to get the win, and it wasn't the case. And I just I thought, I'm going to have to let it play another minute, aren't I?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to let them have a chance. And I did that. But it was nice for them to after say, oh, how long did you play over? I was like 3 minutes because of this, why, and that. And they were fine with it.
Hmm.
But, yeah, it's difficult.
It is difficult.
You can't, listen, the referee, I said, it's all a hard job, but, yeah, referee is hard.
It's the hardest.
People on the sidelines. And if you're refereeing your own team, your own club, you'll always, no matter what, you'll get accused of being the home ref. And I think, whether it's a Keynsham thing around here, Red Falcons, Fries, and I think potentially Keynsham. I think we are probably too soft some of the time. The home refs around here is...
too honest.
Too honest, and you do go that... Because, you know... But it is horrible, and fair
but
play
we,
to
but we know it, yeah, but we also know how difficult it is to get refs, because we, I think we discussed it in a previous podcast. We went last year, went down to Porter's Head. He was on his own. He refereed the manager and coach. I think we were doing both lines. He had nobody else.
Surrenders.
So we actually did both lines for him. Because, and he was so grateful to us.
Under 15s,
yeah.
And he had 14. Yeah. I mean, and when they came here, he came down on his own. So they've driven all the way from Porter's Head, parents.
Just drop the kids around.
Not
one of them came down.
We kick off at about 10
not
minutes.
Not one of them came down to watch their kids play.
No, they did. 10 minutes into the game, I refereed that one. And he said to me, "There, here they come now." 10 minutes into the game, he was on the line. He goes, "Here they come." I was near him for a throw-in.
Yeah.
I look round, and they're wandering across the field from the
with
bar.
A drink.
10 minutes into the game, yeah.
So they didn't have to run the line.
So
my jaw hit the floor.
So
then.
We are actually better off. But yeah, so it's worse for others.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Kit person, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we're pretty good actually. We've got the previous secretary, who now is in charge of the boys' tots.
Yeah. Soccer tots.
Soccer tots. He is the person in charge of the kit. So all, as in the official kit.
Yes.
So all the kit, we just put the orders in, goes to him, he orders everything. So that is a lot easier. You look back to the old days and everyone has to go off and find a supplier and all those other things.
Yeah.
It used to be, I can remember my mum, when I was knee high to a grasshopper, every Saturday night, my mum would have all the kit in our sink, soaking the mud out of it, put it in the wash machine on the line on a Sunday, drying it out. Nowadays, most teams have got enough that everyone's given their kit.
Yes.
But
it's getting it back in though, isn't it?
Well, on my previous team, I got a form and gave them a number and got them all to sign it.
Yeah.
So they all had a number. They said, "There you go. That's what you signed for."
Yeah.
I haven't done this, man. I have to admit, I am missing one or two numbers of this kit.
Yeah.
But we're in our final year, so I'm not so concerned.
No, I mean, but you get the kit, and they all want to look the part now. So you have a training kit.
Yeah.
Training jackets. Hoodies, bobble hats,
everything,
tracksuits.
Yeah.
But the good thing there is we don't buy that as such. But you still have to organise it.
So we've been proactive, and we deal with a local company, Kitco, and they've put on our website. We got Club Shop on their website.
Mm.
So if any parents want to purchase training kit, etc., they go straight through that.
Yeah, we've got a Club Shop on our website, but of course our Club Shop, the kit never changes.
Yes, right, yeah.
So in 20 years' time, our kit will be exactly the same.
Same, yeah.
We used to use them, but after 3 years, we got a kit. No, the supplier has changed.
Yeah.
So that's why we went this route instead. And so the kit never changes.
And
that's the good thing about it. But this is a good thing. So I'm currently just ordering some rain jackets for my entire under eight girls. They just come to me, they give me the sizes. Put the email through.
Job done.
And it's done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, this stuff isn't cheap. I mean, I think.
No, anything is.
If you wanted a coat, the fleece coat from our thing is 40 odd quid.
No, it depends how many you buy.
Well, it goes down to 38.
Yeah.
But I think that's standard prices across the board now.
We do, obviously, the charity events and stuff like that.
Yeah, we do the same.
And
I got sponsorship to pay half of mine as well.
That helps, doesn't it?
This is it. You used to get sponsorship for kit.
All the time.
Yeah, now you go off and get sponsorship and
they'll give you half for it.
Give you half sponsorship and a tenner for off the parents.
Yeah.
And you got the coats, rain jackets for everyone.
I could go off topic here, but
go a little bit off topic, go on. Because as a manager, but as a coach, you've had to do this.
But with the kit, and where I think Red Falcons and Fries are fantastic, I don't know how much Ben's Red Falcons charge. But there was a thing on the grassroots survey. Do you pay, I think it was £15 a month, 20 to 25, and up to £46 a month?
Yeah, yeah.
Ours is 145 a year, so we're we only charge a tenner.
Yeah,
What the hell are we doing wrong here? We're giving it away.
We screwed the prices down exactly like that as well. Mm. Because at the end of the day, I want it affordable for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's the whole...
And that's
the whole thing.
And that's what, coaches do. They give up their time.
Yeah.
They give up... And certainly these, I think the clubs, so fortunate here.
We are,
with the facilities we've got and the two clubs that we've got. And again, hopefully the parents appreciate what everybody does and all the volunteers, the coaches, to keep the costs down.
And the staff, here. The staff at Summerdale are fantastic. And without them, I look at them as part of both the families, you know what I mean?
They are.
They're part of the Fries and the Falcons family, and that's how I...
But we were having a discussion about subs 10 years ago, and I can remember arguing about the cost of it, and we said, you know, God, we can't get that expensive because this club over here are charging 20 quid a month every month.
Yeah.
And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
So goodness knows what they are now.
Yeah. And I know pitch fees have gone up, and the bigger you get, the more pitch fees go up. It's just... So a lot of logistics people don't realise. This is the treasurer bit.
Let's move on to the treasurer. Exactly, that's fine.
Going back to the kit side of things as well, like I used to do all the kit orders, but I said it's too much now because the club's grown too much. I need someone else to take it on or at least help me. And so one of our other coaches, funnily enough, is a coach again, is taking that on and then amalgamated a club shop. But he still has to order strips.
Yeah.
So when we get a full strip come in, so it'll be that 16-17 kits. He has to organise that because you can't do that through the club shop. So it's a lot of admin, and I don't think people appreciate it until they're in it.
No. I mean, it's a
I'm sure there's people that do.
Yeah.
But yeah,
the majority don't.
No, I don't think it's because they don't see it. No. It's like an invisible task, isn't it? It's not a physical task, is it?
Kit turns up and they come over and said, "Oh, I've got socks. Okay, I'll get you some." And that's all they know.
Sports director, right?
Yeah.
Just get the black.
No, as in the manager says, "I'll get you some socks."
Yeah.
That's all they know.
Yeah.
That is it.
But they don't know what
goes behind it.
It goes through three people to get those socks, and then the supplier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can move on to treasurer. Absolutely. I mean, I'm collecting subs to pay for kit. I'm subs to pay for referees. Also for the things like the team wear as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so we're... Because our club, you're not allowed to have separate accounts.
No, same as us.
So
I made sure we never had separate accounts.
So at home, I've got all this money. Okay, let's keep that there. I've got that there. I don't want to keep this, but I've got to pay out very quickly.
Yeah, or go and put it into the club and say...
Here, Mr. Treasurer, have that. Keep it to one side.
Can I have it when there's a note? Can I have that, please? So I put 300 quid in.
Yeah. And again, it's a lot of, and it has to be done that way, but it puts a lot of pressure on the treasurer and stuff. Mm. It puts a lot of things.
Our treasurer is very good, but it's a lot of pressure.
I worked out tonight. We've got 24 entities within our club, including the Soccer Tots, Wildcats. We've got 24 entities within our club. That's a hell of a lot of different teams paying in money.
Hell of a lot of people, isn't it? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Paying in money from different angles, saying, "Oh, this is our team's money. That's our team's money. What's that for? Well, that's for referees. That's for kit. That's for team kit.
Yeah.
That's for sponsorship. I mean, my team's doing a tour, so that's for tour.
Yeah.
This is for the..." So, I mean, that's the club treasurer. But I mean, you know, you get into it, but you need somebody to be the club treasurer as well as your team sort of fundraising treasurer as well.
Definitely, yeah.
And as I said, the fundraising and stuff. And it said for every club to survive, you need... to keep the costs down. I mean, I think I said you get these clubs. I mean, when I read £45, I thought, what grassroots club is charging 45 quid a month? Like, I could quit my job and charge you 45 quid a month, everybody.
I was listening to Kevin Day talk about his book, Improper and Unfit Persons. It's like now talking about how to start a grassroots team and go all the way to Europe. And I've just bought it, so I'm waiting for it to arrive. And it talks about the costs. Right from if you started right now a grassroots team to go all the way through, and it's everything from your registrations for the cost of registering the team, each individual team, the insurances, registering with the league, buying the kits both home and away because you have and all that sort of thing, and having all the insurances, all the training and everything, because like every manager must have introduction to coaching. That's £100.
Yeah, it's a bit straight more away than that now, isn't it?
150. No, it's £100.
It's 140
odd quid. 140 now,
yeah.
Yes. Oh, I looked online 2 days ago to send it to one of our managers, it was £100.
Mm.
Well, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
What is it, so, Black Friday? It's Black Friday. Yeah.
That's what I thought it was 140.
It's about 140 last time we paid.
Well, it was £100 on so right. They got it on offer, I don't know.
I say it advertised for coaches. Yeah. It's cheaper this time.
Your DBS every 3 years that's £10, I know, but it's your safeguarding is £30 every 3 years.
First aid,
£30 every 3 years. So all that has to come out of the fundraising.
Yeah, it does.
So which you know, whether you collect it as a manager or, you know, we've now got direct debits and all that sort of setup.
Yeah, same as us. Yeah.
But this has only been the last couple of years.
Yeah.
We set up standing orders, I think about 7 or 8 years ago. My team was the first one to do it. We were the first ones to do it. My under 16s when we were under 7s. We set up standing orders and every team we followed were doing these standing orders. Same. Yeah. Before that, it's like, 10 quid, 20 quid, 50 quid, whatever. And that was it. I'd pay cash into the treasurer. And that's how you all used to
do it.
Chaos. It absolutely was.
Remember when my dad used to do it? Yeah, he'd be collecting cash as people were turning up. The kids were giving him cash.
And in fairness, we still do that for the Tots and the Wildcats. If you turn up, it's £1 or £2, whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you don't turn up, don't worry about it, because why would we charge you if you're not here, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But, it's...
Because they're not playing in leagues or anything where you have to pay the registration fees and the fines and etc.
This Unfit and Improper Persons book talks about the actual cost of starting a grassroots team right the way up, and just
I can't say how much we spent to start ours.
No, exactly, but that's the point. The
my wife might divorce me.
The thousands you have to pay out is ridiculous.
I mean, they say that with a child it's £1 million for whatever it is from when they're born to their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
How scary it would be if you looked at under 70. I mean, it would. But, and again, I don't think people realise the costs that go involved into. Because everybody looks. Well, none of you get paid. And nobody gets paid.
Nope.
Yeah.
Everybody's volunteered.
No, people think we get paid. A number of people have asked me, even my grandchildren say, this is your job, isn't it, Granddad? No. I don't get paid. None of us get paid.
No.
They can't believe the number of people who think this is the paid role. Everything is voluntary. We do.
They think these facilities are free.
Yeah,
they think everything is just free. And again, we're lucky here. Both clubs get.
Yeah.
They even provide. We get food provided for. You know, and stuff like that. And what we do, and what they.
The kids don't know they're born.
No.
Well, this is it. We ask them to come in and support the club because the club is putting on food, and they're like, "Oh no, I'm not good in there." It's like. They're putting this on for you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that. And then you get other clubs that come to it, and I've overheard clubs thanking you.
Yeah.
I've been in the bar at the same time, and I've heard them thanking you. Yeah. All the kids love that. Thanks for that. The girls loved it. The boys loved it. Thank you so much.
And I said it's all part.
And it makes a hell of a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you've won or lost that day, because that results don't matter. I just think it's brilliant.
Well, we had a slightly contentious game on Sunday afternoon, didn't we? But by the end, they were all in here. The people who came in, that had chips, really enjoyed it. They thanked us afterwards. It all went afterwards, the bar itself.
This
is how you want it to be.
100%. Leave it on the field.
You leave it on the field. Yeah. Leave it on the field, it's gone.
Leave it on the pitch.
Yeah.
But, yeah. People don't realise.
We're digressing from being a coach.
Yeah, we have.
but this is part of
being a coach.
Mark and I do this a lot. We start off down this path of chatting about a subject in a podcast, and before you know it, we've gone through the trees, over the hills, and far away. It's like, where's that path we were on? Miles back.
So it is all part of being, and it's part of your daily week that you do it.
Well, that's why we're talking about it. We wouldn't bring it up if it wasn't. I feel like it's part of my coaching.
Yeah,
yeah,
100%.
I mean, I always, to any new parent that comes to the girls, at the moment the girls, the boys are too, I always say the football is important. It is not, it's almost not the most important thing. The most important thing is the social side.
Friendships.
Being part of a team.
Yeah.
Like I said, friendships. Being part of a community. Being part of something. The football is like, 2 hours.
Well, there's football.
Two, 3 hours.
To me, the football is what you use to create that social cohesion and that community bonding. That's how you use to put it.
Yeah.
You don't. The football isn't the end result. The football is how you use to get there.
And the majority of the memories they've got, most of them can't remember. You said, what happened when you played? I don't know. Bristol Rovers last year.
Well, I was going to say, Mark, before you carry on that thought, one of the things I've got down here is social events coordinator. Now, I would also add charity event coordinator because Mark, carry on, Mark, as part of the social events.
But I get it is
part of our social event coordinating.
Yeah, it's the charity events. And
but it's what it's brought out of, for the especially for the girls. I mean, the boys as well who joined in, but the social aspect, things like all those who joined in the walk, they had a great time together, or the going to Wembley, we did the going to Wembley.
Yeah, I see the all that, it's good.
I mean, the thing, the memories.
Yeah, it is memories, because I think the Wembley trip, the walk, the chips that we have here afterwards, going to watch the Lionesses, everything. When the girls are in their 30s, 40s, that's what they remember.
They remember the game they played before it.
No, we played football, but we went to Wembley. We went to... Oh, and we also raced... And for me, one of the... You know, I think as a club, as a thing, and being part of raising... I think we've given the children hospice over £7,000. And that is... But it's getting the girls and the boys to realise you're lucky to play football.
Yeah.
There are people much more... And that is something... I think all football clubs, generally, they are part of the community. I'm looking at this summer, there's two old ladies behind you there on their picture. Because they're part of the community, they're part of what they... And girls have got to show, and the boys have got to show respect to those ladies and stuff like that. And as coaches, you
install that in them, it's a culture.
Yeah, you are
I look at it as I try to build, with any of my teams that I've coached or coaching, I try to build a culture. Yeah. This is how we act, this is how we behave, it's how we treat other people, it's how we respect the officials. As soon as the final whistle goes, if any of my children don't shake hands with the opposition and the referee, I not force them, but I tell them they got to do it. Yeah. Otherwise, they can't come, they need to go and do that. That is a must. And I'll say it, as soon as the final whistle goes, shake hands, say good game. That's a standard.
The first thing I'm shouting in general across the field is shake hands
to everyone. One of the first whistles blown is I say enjoy it both teams.
Yeah,
that is my first thing.
Yeah,
enjoy it both teams, and that's the loudest. I'll be loud, and then I focus on my team.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I said. I think you are. As coaches, you are coaching football, but you are coaching them for life.
You are coaching them.
Yeah. When they're out and about in their early 20s they know how to behave. Now, you're not the parents, but like you said, you're like the uncle, another uncle or somebody like that. You're guiding them in life. And so football is important, but like I said, the social events, the charity event, everything like that, the community events, for me, and I tell every parent that comes, is more more important than the football.
Yeah, for me.
And if you want to be to a club that is all about just winning the football matches,
there's plenty out there.
Go and find another club.
There's plenty out there. Chew your child up and spit them out in two or three years' time when they haven't grown. Mm. And the best player in the world is the shortest player, one of the shortest players in the world.
Now, part of that you say about the children is safeguarding.
Yes.
Now, I don't mean in the terms of, although safeguarding does cover protecting them from abuse, but just being that. Like you said, that shoulder to cry on if they're upset, or just that
someone to turn to,
turn to a mentoring. Have you guys had that experience at all?
I have, I have a number of times. Sadly,
in a positive way.
It is a positive thing because they felt they can come to me and they can have that conversation, and then it goes through the proper channels, etc. Because you have to escalate it up, or whether it gets that far, and welfare thinks no, actually doesn't.
Hmm.
Maybe I'll just go and have a word with. Whoever, but, or the child, or whatever.
I've had it in a perhaps a different way, as I see it, is that in my very first team, there was a lad whose mum, single parent, mum just either didn't want to or just couldn't get there.
Yeah.
So from the age of 10, I was picking him up, training and matches every single week. That's all I did. Now, to me, you could perhaps put it under the safeguarding the child, making sure he got to the games, got home for the games, safety. Got to training. That was my role. I made sure he got there every single match, every single game, training, week in, week out. You know, you may, and by doing that, you give that child the outlet of sport
and the freedom,
and then that social group to bond with as well. You know, so it's not, you know, so it's not just about the protection of abuse. It's also the safeguarding in terms of making sure they're safe to get there and safe when they're here.
So with going on that now, what you did back then, which was totally fine within the things
30 years ago,
within today's laws. You couldn't do that.
No, you can do it within today's laws. There's no law that says you cannot do it. You
can do it.
What you're saying is you'd be advised under. Not to. Yes. There's no law that says you can't pick up a child if mum says go and get in that car and bring them to football. But if that child says something at you and you're the only person, yes, you're on very, very shaky grounds.
Yeah.
There's no law against that.
I would always say, if my coaches ask me, I say, you can offer. But if someone asks you, you make sure there's someone else with you. Just to protect yourself. Because, yeah.
I think you said previously there was a manager once who was it under 16s, under 17s, used to have to go into the boy's bedroom and pick him up once he was drunk or something like that at that age.
That wasn't me.
So it was a story that once, going back again a few years ago on a Sunday morning, so a coach's story where parents said he's upstairs, he's sleeping it off.
Really?
And they would have to go up and drag him out of bed.
Really?
To go and play a game on a Sunday morning.
I'd leave him.
No, I mean, the story I've told before, I think you've heard it before, is where the manager, slightly different, two players haven't been available because one's in Bridewell Police Station and one's in Yate Police Station. And he hasn't gone to get them. That's slightly different. He hasn't been able to go and get them. No, I've gone to get players in my car. Well, in fairness, I still do. One player, I pick him up, then I pick up my grandson.
Yeah, he was
because it's on the way.
Yeah.
You know? But that child isn't getting to football otherwise.
And that's it.
But again, I suppose you look at the new safeguarding rules and everything, which are there for a very, very,
very, very, very,
very,
good,
very good reason.
But they're more to protect yourself, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
And it's...
If you're an honest, decent human, they are to protect you.
Mm. I know. I mean, I look
if
back
if you're the other side of it, then they're there to hopefully crucify you.
Mm.
But this, I mean, the thing was, I had this lad... I'd be down here and it's getting dark and it's 7-8 o'clock, it's dark, and this 9-year-old lad stood there and it's like
your mum coming
yeah, I'm sure he is, and in the end I'm like, okay, I'll take you home then, because she's obviously not coming.
Yeah.
I'd take, and it sort of kind of started from there, and she's, oh yeah, I was going to come. And it kind of started from there, really.
Wow.
Still friends with him now.
She's good. And I expect
she's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, what else do you do? That lad would not have had the playing experience and the social experience he had.
And the memories.
And the memories, absolutely
talking
not.
Talking about going on tour, I never went on tour as a player, so I made sure that I provided that for my age groups. And I said to them at the end of last season, I said, you don't know how lucky you are, I never went on tour because my dad had his own business, etc. So he could, weekends was either football or he was working. So like for us to go on tour was like, it's a massive thing. And that's a social event. And that's a core memory.
Yeah.
That's a core memory.
And it's what you said, when they're 20, 30s, the tours, like you said, going on, that is what their memory is.
And they won't remember playing the games, they just remember we were in the arcade or in the club.
And you said, you then go back to how parents, a lot of coaches, go on like these autumn cup finals, spring. They won't remember that in 20. But like you said, they will remember that they went to...
Butlin's Moynihan or whatever, yeah.
And they had a cracking...
Or Haven.
Will they remember that they won the under-9s autumn cup final?
Probably not.
No.
Unless you remind them constantly.
Yeah. Well, by the time they're adults, they'll have lost the medal.
Or it's in a box somewhere. Yeah.
But
mum and dad got hold of it.
Well, because all the medals, they have all generic medals.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They might have a sticker on the back saying Autumn Cup or Spring Cup, and that's about it.
And that's, as I said, for me, it is all about you're coaching them for life. And
well, we're actually running out of time on this episode. There's a few more things I want to go for. We'll go for just one more of these lists, which is dealing with parents. I know you all love it. just a general dealing with parents.
Okay.
Give me a good story or a bad story, Ben.
I got to be honest. I can't remember a bad story. So I've been really lucky and really blessed that I think when I created, obviously I created Red Falcon, I co-founded them, that when I did that, people bought into the ethos of not just the club, but me as a coach. And I set my standards straight away at under sevens. Look, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're about. Please trust the process. And thankfully, they did. I haven't had a crossword with any parent, I'll be honest. Maybe, yeah, maybe give one, but
give it time.
Yeah, it'll come. I know it's going to come, but I think maybe one, but it wasn't even a crossroad. It was just a difference in opinion, and we had a conversation because we were friends.
Yeah.
Because of their child playing, it kind of just, well, that was it. It was like, well, okay, that's your opinion, that's my opinion, and we both just kind of went, meh. There's no point in arguing about it. Yeah. And I think his words were, should we get a beer? That was it, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I said, again, with the girls' teams, and so at the moment, they are very good. I mean, bizarrely, the parents I have the most issue with is the ones who don't even turn up.
Oh, yeah, there's that. Other age groups from as the chairman I hear about.
So you get parents that, I'll be honest, there's one parent who I'd walk past now and I wouldn't know who she is. But I can guarantee every other week I will get a moan about something that's happened.
An email or a text.
You weren't even there. Yeah. You've got on something that's happened or not happened, or and I find that personally is what I find the most frustrating. I think the joy of football is a game of opinions.
100%.
And your opinion will be totally different. I'm sure I'm an annoying parent to Andy with, because he's got both his boys in the under 16s. And as a coach and as a parent, I would say my opinion on certain things as a parent and as a coach.
No, surely not.
But I don't mind that with my parents if they're there, because that's the game what football is, how I see it, and how the ones that drop off and then vanish, and I don't, and then they still have the thing to have to say, well, this wasn't done right, that one. You weren't there.
Yeah, you don't know the situation. You don't know the whole picture. Yeah, exactly, the full picture.
I mean, again, we've got this game on Sunday with the under 10 girls. So we've had these autumn cup games. How the league does it is daft. So we're an A division team. We've been putting with B and C division teams. I will never humiliate a team.
No.
So we've won games comfortably, but our better girls, or girls who we consider to be better players, you're only playing half a game. You're playing this, you're playing that. So we've got the final on Sunday. They will play more. But the total game over that four-game period, everybody would have played the same.
Yeah.
And it's totally the same. We've not humiliated any teams, and we're going to be competitive, hopefully, on Sunday. I guarantee there'll be two or three parents who have only come because it's a final.
Final, they'll
will turn up and say, well, how come so-and-so played this? And they'll time it. I will guarantee I'll get messages saying, so-and-so played 12, so-and-so played 16.
Wow.
And you've not been there for the last four games.
You have parents time game time.
Yeah.
Wow. But I think those parents, this is a message from me, you should step up and coach.
Yeah. I will.
I try and do it as fair as I can. Yeah. And you do, how you've described it, I'm sure you do as well. Yeah. So if someone was to question my game time, I would literally just hand over my coaching role there and then.
And
ta-da, you do me.
But Ben, it'll be parents who've not been to the previous three games, who've seen that their daughter's played X.
I'm cross for you.
Yeah.
I'm angry for you.
And I'm not there, and I know that it's going to happen before it's even happened.
And that's the sad part, isn't it? And you think there were all those hours you've given up to give their child or everyone's child.
And it'll be minutes.
A chance.
Sometimes. So I've had an email and a moan when we've been at a tournament, 10-minute games. You can only sub on and off when the ball goes out of play. And I've had a moan saying they played 2 minutes less. Well, I couldn't get them on.
Yeah.
What are you coming to do? Okay. And so you get, that is the frustrating
that
thing.
That is unreal.
When, and I said, unfortunately, I might not even be at this game on Sunday. I might have to go to another game. So missing my own daughter's cup final to make sure 11 other girls can play.
Yeah.
I will then come back and get messages saying, and you think,
you don't mind if they approach you?
No, but it'll
if
be,
someone came and see me face to face, I'd much prefer that.
Yeah, but it'll be Sunday night.
That makes me sad.
Yeah.
When you're sat down having your tea with your time with your family after being out with everyone else's children for the day.
I guarantee there'll be a message. And it'll start, I don't want to moan.
But.
All right.
I appreciate everything, but.
Yeah.
I'll end this with my little example. And it's not actually not having a go. My first team. the player played sort of for me for the first 3 or 4 years, and the mum was just a constant worrier about whether it was the child's mental health or the child's ability. Mm. Play the game in the morning or the afternoon, go home. This is the day with the old phones, you know, plugged in phones.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife, she'd laugh because guaranteed between 6 and 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening, the phone would go.
The landline goes.
Andy, my so-and-so, I'm a bit worried about him after today's game. And it was virtually every week.
Why?
Or do you think he did okay today? Or what do you think happened today? It was just every single week. So it was funny, don't get me wrong, it was quite funny. My wife and I would giggle.
Make a joke about it.
She wouldn't get upset, but like, so it wasn't an angry parent or an upset parent, it was more of a concerned parent, but yeah, it was just every single week. As I'm, you're like, oh, she hasn't phoned yet. Oh, there it is.
Like you said, back in the phone calls, how do Red Falcons find it with obviously modern technology where it is a lot easier to message?
Yes, far easier. But I also think technology's is a... What's the word I'm looking for?
It's a boon and a...
It's convenience for wimps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Convenience for wimps.
Oh, you mean like the keyboard warriors?
Yeah, I mean like the letdowns.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, such and such as... Like my dad, when he was he would either, the player wouldn't turn up, or he would get a phone call on the landline, and that was it.
Mm.
I think it's convenient. Like, it's easy to send a text, isn't it? If you think for like going,
I could
have easily texted you tonight and gone, oh, I'm not going to bother.
Mm.
And
I've had a bit of a day at work, which I have, but I'm still here because I want to talk about something I feel really passionate about. But like, I could have gone, oh, do you know what? I really don't.
Yeah.
I'll just send a text.
And it's easy.
That's easy, isn't it? Boop, I've sent a text. There you go. Phone down on the side.
Yeah.
I don't have to look at that again.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realise is that lets not just you down, but can also let the children down.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, you've planned your sides, your starting lineups, etc.
Yeah.
I normally do it the day before or the night before when the wife's trying to watch something. We're trying to watch a movie together, and she's like, "What are you on your phone?" I'll just do my starting lineup.
I've gotten to a point now where I plan the starting lineup when I see you've turned up.
My
under 16 is like, who's here?
These
are the ones I expected. Good. That was the side I had in mind.
That's the five that were in.
These five are here, they're playing. Out of 11.
I saw something on the thing, which, when a parent organises the birthday party.
Yes.
And they say, and you get let down, and you think, God, I've spent so-and-so organising events, doing this and doing
I've
that.
Done party food, party
blah,
bags,
blah, blah, and sorted that. All that, and you've let me down the last minute. That is what a football coach does every week.
Yeah.
And every week you phone up and say, feeling a bit poor. Or
such as got sniffles this week,
Or suddenly, really? Nana's asked to go, we're going to go there instead.
Yeah.
That is what it's like. So for a football coach, it is running a kids' party
every week.
Yeah.
3 times a week.
and on that party spirit, we're going to end of part one. So we come to the end of part one. Keep an eye out for part two, which should be out in a week or two. However, for us sat here, it's going to be recorded after a quick comfort break and a drinks refill. But for now, my thanks to Ben.
Thank you.
And my thanks to Mark.
Thank you.
And
everybody. We'll
be back after this short-ish break.
Don't forget, you can email us your questions, comments, random thoughts, anything you want to share with us at greengreengrassroots@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @FryClubJFC, on Facebook, which is FryClub Junior FC, and the club website, which is www.fryclubjfc.co.uk. You can type out a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like us, then please give us 5 stars on Spotify. You've been listening to a We Haven't Got a Clue What We're Doing production, produced and edited by Andy Glover.